On this week's show, lapses in construction data with Hamad Chaudhry from Timescapes.
Construction is the world's oldest industry, but spends the least amount of money on innovation. When we realized people outside the construction industry didn't typically associate construction with technology like virtual reality, apps, and robotics, we started The Contech Crew. Each week, we bring our listeners the latest in Contech news and interview the minds behind the technological innovations changing the way we build. So strap in, enjoy the ride, and geek out. It's Contech Crew time.
All right, Nathan Wood, we're back on the microphone together. What's happening, my man?
Happy Valentine's Day. How are you?
You know, I'm good, except, you know, this will come out past that. So happy Day to everybody.
But it's okay. It's a nice day. I'm happy. I'm feeling the love today.
All right. I like that. And now you might recognize him. If you haven't, you need to go back and check out a previous episode. But we got Hamad on the show. Hamad, how you doing, man?
Hey, I'm doing well, Jeff and Nathan. Thank you for having me.
Coming down to us from Canada.
Minus 20.
Minus 20 degrees?
Well, Celsius or Fahrenheit?
Celsius, but yeah, does it really matter at that point?
I don't know. I don't know how to calculate in that direction.
It's cold, but beautiful.
It's cold, but beautiful. And I'm excited. We're going to get into the story here because you've joined the dark side. We'll get into that in a minute. Before we get into that, guys, check us out on social, man. Follow me on LinkedIn. Follow the Contech Crew on LinkedIn. Follow Nathan Wood on LinkedIn. Catch all our shorts. Check us out on YouTube. We want you engaged. This conversation is about the industry, and it is a crazy year this year. So I think there's lots to be said and lots to be talked about. So make sure you catch us on social, guys.
Are you trying to reach the innovators and decision makers in construction technology? Then look no further than sponsoring the Contech Crew. That's right, we're taking new advertisers. Email us at advertising@thecontechcrew.com to learn more.
I get to call you and welcome you to the dark side, Hamad, Vice President, Market Development and Partnerships at Timescapes.
You got it.
For those who don't want to rewind and go back and listen to the episode with you from a couple years ago, tell us a little bit about how you got here and what you're all about, my man.
Starting back after kind of university and college, I started in architecture, worked there for a few years. Being Alberta-based, oil and gas drives the economy, so that slowed down. Jumped over to the contractor side, joined one of the largest construction companies in Canada at that point, and worked my way from a project coordinator through different roles all the way into the corporate side, eventually leading innovation in construction technology. So, you know, did really cool things, launcher drone program, accelerator program, a lot of the construction technology focus, improving BIM, basic tools and, you know, valuable software that helps different parts of the construction process. And then now, you know, the opportunity to join Timescapes as their vice president of market development, helping build that brand and reputation within Canada and the US, and then also bringing in partnerships so that, you know, the ecosystem needs to kind of work together, as you know that, Jeff and Nathan. So trying to bring that aspect as well.
That's awesome. So take a step back. So architecture in the project coordinator, what were some of the things that happened during those phases that sort of brought you over to innovation? And I don't want to leave that part out. I want to hit the first part, really. Like, what drove you in those experiences to, you know, sort of look at technology differently? Because you do have a different take on it. You're not just a toy person, you're a tool person. So give us a little idea of some of the experiences along the way.
Yeah, I mean, look, in hindsight, I think it's easier to put a story together. As things were happening, I had no idea what was happening, to be honest, right? So I was lucky. I jumped into a project right off the bat with Ellis Don that had these vets in the industry. I'm talking about 30, 35 years of experience, general super, concrete super, construction manager, our owner representative, the architect, the mechanical, electrical trades, you name it. Everybody had so much experience. And there I was, brand new, green to construction, didn't know anything. And because I was coming from an architecture background, I knew how to use technology better than most people, I would say, at that time. So I knew rather AutoCAD, SketchUp, stuff like that. So they wanted me to do the BIM coordinator role as well. Because back then it was kind of like, hey, it's just a side job. It's not a full-time job. You can do what we expect you to do as a coordinator, and then you can figure out that stuff for fun. In doing so, you know, looking back, like, you're building a really high pace, high quality project, and all these workflows that you learn from these people that they've done hundreds of times. And then to your point, like, well, man, there's a technology process we could do to scale that better. And as we keep going through, then I was getting a lot of coaching and mentorship from these people as well, right? Not what people may think of nowadays is a different type of coaching and mentorship. And I think if you've been on site, you know, 10 years ago, you know what I'm talking about. But you learn those, like, very deeply to your core. And so when I was going out later on in my career trying to deploy technology, I'd always think about it from that lens of, you know, what would Brad or Tim say to me if I came to them with this? A really good anecdote, Jeff and Nathan, when I first came on site, introduced myself as a project coordinator and the BIM guy, they said, you know what, maybe you should get out of this project trailer and come back when your 3D model can dig a hole in the ground. And I kid you not, 2-3 months ago when we ran the accelerator, the last one there, we had one of the finalists dig robotics. They have an autonomous excavator. So it came full circle after 10, almost 11 years. But unfortunately, those guys are long gone retired.
That is really cool, because we have a scheduled episode with Dig Robotics because we covered them thanks to your accelerator program. So they will be coming on the show. Ken will be on the show in a couple weeks. So that'll be awesome. But also, you named two people. You don't want to dig into the names of the people, but it is so crazy how many of us who've gone through this process can literally name the person that they impacted and impacted them. I mean, I had Tui Cordemash on a couple of weeks ago, and when I was talking to him offline at Groundbreak, he had this person that he met when he was walking around early on in the Procore days. It was a project manager that, you know, he showed them what it was, and he could still name that person. And, you know, think about how many people that guy's met since. So it's a true, like, there's this connection point that I think makes us connected to the industry and connected to what we're doing, because you're right. I mean, we're getting to the point where it can dig a few holes, but you know, the technology is really not doing the work. There are still people doing the work.
100%.
So, and you know, we might, some of us might not have learned it nicely. Like you said, you know, it was a different day and age, although it's still that day and age a little bit out there. You know, it's because look, it's a dangerous environment, right? If you think about Chad Pearson from Plexus, he calls it VUCA. Right. You know, this is, it's always going to be a dangerous environment. So there's always going to be a heightened level and an increased sort of intensity, which makes the software part and the innovation part more difficult, but more valuable. So talk about, as you sort of went through that process from, you know, project coordinator and really getting work done, and the BIM person, and now up into the corporate side, because you took a jump into the corporate side because the organization and you looked at it differently. So what was that process like, and what was that vision sort of to bring you over there and do that?
I had aspirations that I would become a construction manager one day. And so what happened was, we're sitting at a project, and it was project downtown Calgary for the city of Calgary, renovation at City Hall, and it's traditional project coordinator, no BIM technology, everything's super fast paced. Like, you can't even get a scan done to model it in the time that fit outs are getting done, right? So it's just pure construction. And, you know, the operations manager, this guy named Shane, comes down, and I thought I was getting fired because, you know, again, oil and gas economy, things are slowing down. So he walks into the room. I look at my PM, Carly. She was a great mentor as well at that point, and some of my colleagues who were at that point coordinators as well and now have become project managers. We look at each other like, who's going to get fired here? And then Shane's like, come on, I got to talk to you. So, you know, it was kind of like the walk of, all right, guys, nice working with you. You know, hopefully we'll stay in touch. And he starts laughing. He's like, what are you doing? I'm like, well, isn't this it? He's like, no, we need you to jump into the BIM manager role for Western Canada. And so I look at him like, dude, should I do it? And right away, he's like, yeah, I do it because nobody else really wants to do it and you can figure it out. So I jumped into it. And
all right, we got to unpack that. Hold on. I have so many questions right there. And this is like raising the hair on the back of my neck because the exact same experience. But I think part of why you asked is like, should I do it? And this whole like feeling of like leaving this project team is like, even if you're moving on to bigger and better things, like there's this feeling of a project team and like this bond that you have, and that until you stick it out to the end, like you're quitting or they're quitting or like somebody's, you know, leaving the relationship, and like there's this very much parting feeling. I don't know. I felt that. I don't know if you felt that. I just, as you were talking about that, I'm curious if that's at all, because I think the project bond versus the corporate level, there's a big jump in that, right? There's a huge cultural shift.
Massive. Yeah, no, yeah. Absolutely, right? Like you have this level of bond. And that's why I think that VUCA example is really good. It's just like, you know, a unit or a sports team or whatever, not a family. Because with the family, kind of, you know, not everybody can pull their weight and you put up with it. But on a sports team or one of those kind of, you know, military examples, everybody has accountability. And that's how it feels like with a really good project team, right? Everybody feels accountable to one another. People start to fill in other people's gaps. You know, they hold each other accountable and say, look, Nathan, you haven't been doing this. What's going on, man? So getting into that corporate environment, of course, you still have that connection with people, but now you got to look at it from a completely different side of like, okay, you know, the organization and the way that that's moving is completely different than what you're doing at a project level. The decisions impact the company maybe at a 5-year, 10-year level. Some of those decisions can have implications that reach way further than you could ever imagine as well. So it is a completely different thing. And again, like for me, it was awesome because the company is growing, the industry is growing. And to be able to now jump in to the technology side, which obviously became Contech, but back then everybody's just talking about BIM and VDC, you know, you learn so much. And so for me, it is awesome in that regard.
Who was your boss at that point as you moved into the corporate role?
So when I first moved into that, is
like what position were they in?
He used to lead the VDC department, became the CTO, this guy named Tom Strong.
Okay.
He's actually NFP now. Yeah, CTO. And then it became the CIO, Rosemary. And up until now is this CIO, the current one, Brandon. So it was into the CTO and CIO roles.
Because I'm always curious, yeah, like where does innovation fall within that whole corporate structure? Can say a lot about your company. If it falls under financial, if it falls under, you know, technology, something is even dedicated to technology, or maybe innovation is the closest thing they have to technology and they kind of wear all the hats, I think, depending on the size of the company.
And I think that's the key, right? The size of the company, because I see a lot of those contractors, whether they're general contractors or even trade contractors. And Jeff kind of talked about this many times before too, is like the CFO does run tech. In Canada, there's this weird thing, like, so Ellis Don and PCL, the two biggest in Canada, develop their own software. And so they don't use Procore, for example, as a project management system. But then you look south of the border in the US and some of the biggest players do end up using, you know, off the shelf software too. So I don't know what that
Wait, nobody in Canada
factor.
Uses CMIC? That's a Canadian company?
A lot of people do use it, but you see what I'm getting at, right? Like these, the big players
we
are developing
their own.
We won't
go down that rabbit hole, but
yeah. I have nothing, like I've never used CMIC, so yeah. I don't know, but they're a huge player obviously, and they've been around for a long time. So yeah.
Yeah. It's an interesting piece because there is a difference, and we've actually had the team, your previous team, on to talk about that software development and that they 100%. Do build their own. And I've had times to talk to PCL and what they've built, and there is a difference, right? And there's some in the US that build it, but it is a more off the shelf approach in some respects. Again, it's a balance. I'm a big fan of buy it off the shelf. Like I think I did this analogy for somebody the other day. It's like, I want to buy the house, but I know I'm going to have to decorate it the last 20% to get it to feel like my house, right? Because that is the key component, right? The walls are up and we need walls and we need floors and we need bathrooms. But some of the fixtures, some of the furniture, the pictures on the wall, those are the things that are custom to me that I want. And so I think there's this 80-20 there where you can really, if you do it right with the right teams, you can take it off the shelf because at scale, it's really hard to keep up with. So you have to have an organization of a certain size that can do it to maintain it. So It's interesting though. You went through all that. You did incubator programs. You really looked at our side, right? The dark side here on software development and in the building of the technology. And so you've obviously made the decision to jump. So talk about this decision to end up at Timescapes, and you know, what is Timescapes doing that brought someone like you with the vision to have an impact over? And you know, what do you foresee in the future for this, you know, now that you're on our side?
Yeah, Jeff, great point. On the kind of accelerator side, even just the overall role, I think when me and my colleagues were talking, I came up with just around 500 demos or pitches or whatever you want to call it, or since like COVID till now. And so there is like this whole purview that I had of technology. And then the previous experiences, I think that we talked about too, the practical being on site, having that accountability and understanding kind of the workflows. And you kind of talked about that 80-20 right now too with software. That was another piece for me was, you know, a lot of smart people developing construction tech, but maybe getting 80% of the way there. And so when we were looking at it, what Timescapes is doing, because they have brought together new technology and kind of an approach to it, but it is a very difficult part of the market, right? So some of these companies have been around for 30 years offering like webcam streaming, for example. So that opportunity of a company that's making so much impact in such a crowded space, everybody else is focused on the net new of AI tools and workflows, whereas, you know, you're taking visual information, which is also, by the way, now like much more valuable with AI and computer vision, and you're providing an experience that people expect in the rest of their lives. One easy example is like my dad can pick up kind of Timescapes, not to pitch it or anything, or my daughter can, they get it. It's kind of the same thing with the iPhone or Uber. Anybody can pick it up and intuitively understand how to use it. And one thing that really got to me is like, again, I've talked to a lot of founders and folks like that in my previous role. Chester, the guy that started it, he started it because he got this interchange in Rotorua, New Zealand. And he was supposed to do the time lapse capture of the progress. And the age old question you always hear, just like Tui said on Procore, there's got to be a better way of doing this. And so that's how he went down the path and created the company. We started working with them for the past 2 years and saw kind of it being deployed on site and people's feedback and also the opportunity and potential. So if you step back into where I was before, a lot of the folks in the peers I was working with across North America and the big construction companies and whatever, there's this strategy everyone's putting together for digital smart construction. Some people have bought companies and whatever. Others are just creating partnerships. The clear trend is that, A, we have a lot more overlap and convergence in technology. So whether it's reality capture, IoT, BIM, VDC, traditional data. And then the second thing is performance-wise, we know we have skilled labor shortage. We know performance on schedules is getting tighter. The buildings are more complex and we have more insurance and delay claims happening. You pair those things up and something like Timescapes to me is a very strong proposition where I can use my skill, my knowledge, but then also learn a lot and make a meaningful contribution to those trends. So yeah, that's kind of why and how.
I love that. And I feel like there's so much to, as I look at just the kind of the interface and what's possible with the data that you can capture and that you can report, is the whole digital multiplier of, you know, now we get to put the construction hat back on, or the contractor specifically, because the contracts is really kind of what we're getting down to, is there are so many things that are required to be reported within our contracts that in theory, this could report if we were okay with more of this kind of big brother mentality, like let it just watch what you're doing and tell you what you did and be okay with it and off you go. But, you know, I'm sure we're nowhere, you know, near that kind of a use case yet for this sort of a technology, or like, where do you feel like in, you know, within your customers, the comfort level with being more transparent about what data is collected and how it is shared between trade contractors, GCs, owners, otherwise?
I think you're hitting on a key consideration just overall. Like, let's just ignore kind of what I'm focused on today. But if you bring up that question of data sharing and some of this information, traditionally, even you've probably seen with contractors, is held so tightly. And now, because of the fact that I think technology has made a little bit more of penetration into the leadership teams across North American contractors, it's like almost an understanding that we can share our data and there would be more value. I think we're in that bridge right now, right? So I know guys like yourself, Nathan, Jeff, you guys are advocates trying to push that. But if you look at the overall industry, it's just starting to realize, okay, maybe it's not the competitive advantage, isn't the data I hold, but maybe the people and how we kind of create that mix of technology and people. And so I just want to point that out. The industry's not there yet. Now let's jump back into Timescapes and kind of what we're offering. And to your point, there is always going to be that big brother feeling, right? There's a camera, I'm being watched. The thing I really have like a lot of excitement about is, you know, contractors have been hiring these companies for 30 years. And so before, as the client saying, you need to have a webcam looking at the job, eventually maybe security came into it. And then, you know, now because of all the new technology around reality capture, 360 photos, all that, this fixed position camera segment has been kind of an area where there's so much opportunity, but no one owns it. And one of the issues you always get for people who aren't comfortable with it is, I don't want to get watched and essentially people dictating what I'm doing. So that you can't just give one size fits all. I think you really got to connect with those people and be able to walk through and show them so they understand what's there, what's not. You can give them all the kind of data policies, all that. That's where I think the corporate IT team comes in. When it's that project manager, the superintendent, or to your point, the trade contractors, you got to work with them, man. You can't shortcut it. So I don't know if that answers fully that piece.
No, I think you hit on it. Yeah. Like and even asking them why, like unpacking, like, why are you so afraid to share this data? And I think challenging back is whether you're in an innovation role talking to leadership or you're in a software sales role talking to whoever's, you know, buying that software, like selling what's in it for them versus what's in it for the project versus what's in it for X, Y, and Z. Like it gets really muddy in our industry, right? And I think like, and you're right in the middle of it, right? Like you are literally capturing all of the messy middle data. And so like, I think, yeah. And you know, having a strategy that can evolve and can adapt, because we do know the reality of, yes, some projects you do need to protect your data. And that is the real world that we live in. We can't ignore that. But how do you slowly open people up to trusting and sharing data more? I think by understanding why they're so afraid to share it. I think it will be, yeah, like hopefully a fun kind of next challenge in this new role that you're in.
Absolutely. I think that is going to be something we learn on. And the lucky piece for me now, you know, I don't know if this is for all of us, is the fact that ChatGPT came and really blew that openly up. And now everybody has to figure that out. Like there's all this conversation around ethics and AI, the government's talking about it, you know, small contractors. So people, when you're hiring, they're like, hey, do you guys use AI tools? Like, do I get access to stuff? So luckily that lid has been blown off in society. And so it'll make it a lot harder, I think, if that wasn't there for business to figure out. But now that that's there, at least there's a collective push to get that cleaned up, right?
Yeah, oh, man. And I think it flips on its head too, right? Because we've had these problems with technology. We have them out in the world and people are starting to understand that, like, you're under surveillance all the time. I mean, I got a warning the other day in the mail of a picture of myself moving out of the fast lane, not the HOV lane, at a part where I shouldn't. And I did it because I thought I was going to miss my exit. So I got off.
Oh, you got that letter too?
Yeah, I got that letter
too. You're getting off of the airport? I know exactly what you're talking about.
Well, no, I was actually going the other way.
Eagle Airport,
And I needed to make a stop. No, I was leaving Denver. Okay. I was leaving DIA and I needed to make a stop. And I didn't realize that I had stayed in the lane too long and jumped out and I got that thing. Now, thankfully, they sent it to me.
Himad, your warning.
To your point, it was like, hey, this is your ticket, but we're waiving your ticket. We want you to know this is happening and this is why we're doing it. And so again, with all of technology, it becomes about the culture and the use. And that's what's cool about an opportunity to take a technology that's been like this for this long and say, listen, this is how we're using it. To go back to the VUCA thing, right? This is, and if you guys don't know VUCA, I should explain it. It's volatility, uncertainty, complexity, and ambiguity. It's to explain, you know, things like, you know, war, construction sites, things that have those qualities. And But what's great is if we can use these tools to protect people, which is exactly what we're really after, right? We do want some of the ancillary understandings of progress, et cetera, but ultimately, like, if it can be used to keep people safe and efficient and effective, we can turn around to those same people and say, listen, like, sure, you can use this as a carrot or as a stick, but let's use it as a carrot. Let's use it to say, hey, this was a dangerous near miss. This was this. And it's always, right? Talk about AI. AI can be weaponized. Many of the innovations over the last 100+ years can be weaponized and can be dangerous. It's about how we use them. And this is this opportunity because of all those things you said. We have schedule and complexity issues. We have unbelievable access and laydown and material issues when you talk about building in these denser and denser cities. You know, I just had a guest on last week that, you know, we got into the conversation of building, expanding hospitals in already operating hospitals. So the vibration of a dig shaking a NICU, right? Like, if you can use a tool that senses that and alerts the team to that, you're saying, hey, you could be affecting the NICU. You don't think they want to know. They want to know that, right? That nobody wants to go home and realize they made some parent have a real bad experience. So there's use cases are the key. And that's where I think you bringing that experience to them and sitting across from them being able to say, hey, I sat in your shoes. That's important to this industry, and it's important to the growth of your company. So I'd like to hear, like, more about how you do see this, you know, because it's a computer vision technology, right? You know, how do you see this impacting and really helping those people? Because that's the keys, right? That's what we have to articulate.
Yeah, and I think there's something that we can jump into that may help explain this further. So Jeff, hold me to it to come back to this question, but we got to kind of take a detour to come back, if that makes sense. And this is all going to be anecdotal, right? So just my experience working with supers and PMs. A big project came up a while ago in Western Canada. This is like over 5-6 years ago. I'm working with the super and saying, hey, look, man, we've got to implement drones on this job. And we go through the whole process of why, like, you know, you need to have site utility services, structure, yada, yada, how we can do all that, going through building those use cases up. And he didn't want to do it, but he did it because I was kind of there pushing him nonstop, if you will, and kind of using that construction experience to really get things done. And we got it out there. And in the beginning, he hated it. And then by the end of the job, he's like, you know what, man, I'm putting this on every job. The next job came up. And I said, okay, man, we need to have timescapes and we need to have 360 photos as well. And here's why, blah, blah, blah. He's like, no, you know what? I just want my drone thing. The other two things, I don't want them. And so, you know, we put it on there, whatever, got going. And then eventually he's like, oh, man, you know, this timescapes thing. And, you know, Strux Hub was the other platform that we put on there as well. This delivery management, I actually like them. I want them on other jobs. But that took 5-6 years of working together through different deployments for them to go through. And now they will push it forward and I don't have to do anything. And that's going to happen. That is something we can't create a shortcut to, right? Like, that is the people aspect who run the VUCA, as you're saying, those chaotic drop sites and manage it. And you do need people to push them and get them there, but just giving them the use cases and ROIs isn't going to do anything. You got to show them that you actually are there, be persistent and walk them through that. And even if it falls flat, you got to get in there and keep going. That piece is, I think, key, because that is kind of the perspective that I want to bring in back to your point now of the use cases and sitting across the table. There is computer vision and there's a lot of inherent value. But practically, majority of job sites across North America don't even use just the fact that you can have a photo of your project for multiple angles to look at basic project management. And if I was saying project management workflows and we threw an arbitrary number of like 100 or 1,000 workflows, just having that record of work happening and all that probably hits like 80% of those workflows in such a deep way that is very basic. It's not going to be revolutionary, but when you see the practical impact of that fitting into like a scheduler, looking at updates, for example, and being able to look at that now on their own instead of bugging the PM to super trying to put that together. Or think about like how many times a super has a pretty big job site and they got to kind of talk to 8 people to figure out one activity, where now you can just take a look at what's actually happening on your job site and be like, okay, you know what, Jeff, I got to call him real quick because he's going to the wrong area. There's so much contextual kind of integration on the most basic level from looking at photos that are high quality in this like really nice experience that nobody else provides right now. That is where my heart is at the Valley. The analytics and the computer vision, I think they do add, you know, a lot, but that's not where really it's going to move the needle right now, in my opinion. That's going to get better over time. People are going to get aware, just like ChatGPT did with AI, and they'll start getting comfortable with what those things can do. But just that core project management value right now, I think, is where a lot of people don't even realize the potential.
Well, and Hamad, I think what you're describing, I use this call like the aha moment, right? It's like that superintendent and you know, who knows what exact workflow of all the different potential use cases it was that he realized after all that pushing. It's like, oh, wait, actually, that is a really good tool for me to go solve this problem. Because again, like all your job every day out in the field in these VUCA environments is solving problems. And what is the best tool available to you to solve that problem? Is it a person near you? Is it your cell phone to text or call someone? Or is it this tool that has a bunch of information in it? And so, you know, you got him to a point through that persistence and pushing and whatever to get to that aha moment. And good for you. The question is like, how many times are you going to have to do that with how many different superintendents? Like, is that the best way to get them to that aha moment? Or is there maybe a more innovative way to get them that aha moment that's more of a pull than a push, right?
I love that, Nathan, because the best advocate are those who are like each other, right? And I think we've talked about that a few times, like Jeff in the past, just offline, is once that superintendent talks to the 50 other superintendents, all of a sudden it's easier than any innovation person or CEO saying, thou shall use this, right?
Oh, yeah.
So that economies of scale comes in after a little bit of time, but you can't shortcut it. It's like that flywheel concept, right? So superintendents or PMs, they start using it. You get enough of them that they're the vocal champions inside of your organization, and then it becomes a best practice through the way they want to do it. But it is a mix, right? Because if you're an investor or venture capitalist, that's not what you want to hear. You want to hear, hey, Hamad, Nathan, you guys are going to go out there and you're going to scale the connection. So instead of one super over 5 years who may impact 50 supers eventually, I want you to hit 50 supers in year one and try and figure that out. And that's the conundrum, right? At the end of the day, it is driven by people.
Well, yeah. And that the return on investment is going to be based on kind of that level of integration. And Jeff, I loved your analogy earlier. I was writing down the new home build one, because yeah, you can think about like, are you building something from scratch where you literally have to build a brand new home and then move into it, all those other challenges? Or is it something where you have to do a renovation, you have to do work on it before you can put it in? You know, we've got all these different levels of effort, because the more we can convey to leadership without being technical what we mean by the impacts of different decisions, and the more we can create these sort of like visual analogies, because sometimes it may just be like, hey, we're, you know, take money out of it aside, we're not even moving into a new home. We don't have to worry about refurbishing it. We're just buying a vacation home where it's already furnished and, you know, it's ready to go. And it's more of those point solution add-ons that it isn't that much of an impact as long as you can afford it and show that ROI, versus something that's more integral to your ERP or other systems are going to be a lot more disruptive, and they're more like moving or potentially building something from scratch. But yeah, I think it's interesting how that all kind of comes together. And I learned something new through all these as technology curious, you know, technology user, but not in the world of technology. So, you know, how can we better communicate to those that are less technical what all this stuff means and what it's all about, and help them make decisions based on what's in it for them? Because yeah, as you described, the superintendent's WIFM is going to be very different from some VC's WIFM. And that's where, yeah, you often get stretched in different directions, but that's kind of falls back on us to be the leaders, to really be able to communicate and put on that hat, depending on who you're talking to. How do you communicate their with them, not just your with them?
And it's an interesting conundrum too, to do it at scale, but actually there is a flywheel opportunity where enough of those supers early enough of those project managers, enough of those organizations start to see the value and talk about the value, and it becomes sort of table stakes, right? It never happens as fast as VC wants it. Never happens as fast as we all want. And honestly, nothing ever really does, right? No project ends as fast as we want. No technology return happens as fast as we want. That's just because it's human nature. But there is a point too here where our asset owners and our economies are pushing for it and are seeing the value of it to the point where it actually drives that to a new level. And I think we're headed for that right now. I think that's why, you know, might be why you took the opportunity now to come over, because I think we're at the tipping point, so to speak.
Yeah, I think that inflection point or tipping point, whatever you want to call it, is happening. Another kind of interesting piece of that is, to your point, if you look at people who are financing projects, the ones who are building them from like the client perspective, their demographic has shifted as well. And so if you look at the financiers and the amount of fintech stuff that has happened, there's almost this expectation, and it gets pretty deep. I don't want to say like overly like perverse almost, but it is in finance right now, especially like family offices, private equity, to pick up all these mechanical, electrical, construction shops and implement technology to squeeze out as much efficiency as you can, right? And then you look at the client side, a lot of them are switching away from commercial real estate and looking at heavy industrial, maybe some data centers or alternative type of, you know, real estate that they weren't before. And in doing so, you look at these pharma and data center clients and their profile, and they're super, super tech savvy, right? So you're seeing that force coming in for sure. And then everything we talked about in construction, like folks like us and even like the innovative CEOs across North American construction companies with a lot of corporate venture capital arms, innovation teams, all that. I think it's clear as day that that is the inflection point and we need to kind of do something. So, of course, I'm excited. I took this jump to kind of try and make my mark with Timescapes and what they provide. But I think the industry at large has so many different confluence points right now. It is going to be really fun to see what comes up in the next couple of years.
We're going to let him mic drop it with the three-letter word of fun. It is going to be fun, and it should be fun. There has to be a level of that. It can be all the things it is, but if we don't have a little fun while we're doing it, we're all going to burn out while we're doing it. So with that, Hamad, it is always awesome to have you sit down, talk to us. I'm excited. Let people know where they can go find out a little bit more about what you're up to and maybe what Timescapes is up to.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Jess and Nathan, once again. So follow me on LinkedIn. Happy to connect there. If you want to learn about, you know, what I'm up in, what Timescapes is up to, again, let's just connect, have a chat, and we can walk through that anytime.
Awesome. Well, Nathan, you took your Valentine's morning to sit down with me. I got a lot of love for the contech world out there, so thank you for sitting down, buddy.
Thank you. My heart is full. Thank you, Hamad. That was great.
Thank you for tuning in today to Geek Out for our interview with Hamad Chaudhry. To read our news stories, to learn about our guests, and to listen to this show, visit thecontechcrew.com. This is the Contech Crew signing out. Until next time, enjoy the ride and geek out.